Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 285 featuring Afonso Salcedo, who returns to us. He comes to us a second time. I think it was about a year ago, right, Kristen, that he came by? Right. And so as you guys may remember, if you remember that episode, he had just moved to LA and was starting his work at Disney. And he's a really cool guy. I met him over at THU a couple of times. And I really like Afonso. So we were going to catch up and I figured, hey, let's record a podcast. Let's see what's going on. How has your life changed since you've been moving to LA? And he's done some really interesting things, right, Kristen?
Yep. So because of COVID, his next job at Disney was put on hold. So he's got to go back to his love of photography. And he's got some cool things. Like, so during COVID, he's got to the streets, seen the emptiness, and really got to explore LA a lot. And take amazing shots with that. And then also the Black Lives Matters protests. He's gone to those and talks about kind of the kit he brings and everything. It's a cool story.
It is pretty cool. I mean, we've had a couple of photographers, but no one really has a photojournalist before. It's really interesting. You know, he brings his press badge and a press vest and everything. And he even talked, like you said, in his bag, he's got like a water bottle with baking soda in it in case he gets pepper sprayed. I mean, he's right there at the front lines of the riots. So it is kind of an incredible story, what he's going through. And I think it's just really great. I think it's really interesting to see that, to hear that perspective, and sort of trying to find something that's, you know, that you can do during this time to take your love of art and photography and bring it some good and do something with it. So it's really cool that he's out there and doing those things and sort of talks about what's going on. So really, really glad we were able to catch up with him. Really cool. We have some announcements, Kristen.
Yes,
what's going on in the world of Chaos Group?
All right. So you can find this out at chaosgroup.com. But the first one, we do have an online event coming up on July 30th.
Nice.
And it's our fourth Ask the Experts series. And we're going to be talking about V-Ray 5 for 3DS Max.
Perfect.
That'll be fun. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And we have some other V-Ray 5 news. What's going on there?
Yes. So we have V-Ray 5 for 3DS Max is available. And then the V-Ray 5 for Maya Beta is available as well. We've talked about that. And then we have Project Lavina, that beta.
Yes.
Do you want to
explain? Yeah, Project Lavina is our real-time ray tracer. It's a standalone application. And anywhere that you're able to do V-Ray, you export a VR scene file. So if you're in Max or Maya or SketchUp or Rhino or Houdini, whatever. You export your VR scene file and then you can open it up in Lavina and do experience our real-time ray tracer. And this is a full ray tracer. This is not rasterized and then ray trace. This is full ray tracing. So you can do some pretty amazing things with it. And it's got some pretty cool functionality as well. So definitely check it out. Definitely check it out if you guys are V-Ray users. You want to check out V-Ray Lavina as it's in public beta right now. So that's also available at chaosgroup.com, right?
Yep.
And then we got one last thing, which is
V-Ray Collection.
Is it V-Ray Collection or Chaos Collection? I don't remember what it is. But anyway, what it is there's basically all the licenses of V-Ray. You can get them. So if you use V-Ray in multiple packages, this is a really good deal for you. You pay one license and you get all the different licenses. And on top of that, we throw in Phoenix as well. So you get three. You get Phoenix, you get some VR scans. You get, what else did you get? I think you get a couple of cloud credits. You get a bunch of licenses. Go check it out. ChaosGroup.com. Check out the collections that we have there. That's a really cool deal for those of you who basically own multiple licenses of V-Ray and just want to consolidate it into one license. It's a pretty good deal as well. All right. I think that's about it for our general Chaos Group announcements. If you guys are interested in the podcast, where can they go, Kristen?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And if you guys want to know more or let us know more ideas of what podcasts you guys want to hear. And by the way, we've been getting some great emails from you guys. So please, you know, keep them coming. Great suggestions. And we're definitely reaching out to some of those people. So it's labs@chaosgroup.com. That's the place you can reach us if you have suggestions of talks or if you want to basically give us some feedback on the podcast we have now, including these videos, which are coming out as well. So the videos are available on YouTube as well as our Facebook page. So go check it out. And our YouTube channel is Chaos Group TV, I think is what it's called. All right. That being said, please enjoy this amazing podcast with Afonso.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
How you been, man?
Oof, what a year, huh? I'm like, I don't even know.
Like, yeah. But you went, you just came back from, where are you, Yosemite?
I went camping in the High Sierra. Yeah. Oh, nice. So it was between Yosemite and Kings Canyon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was really awesome. But, you know. Yeah, it's been a bit of a adventurous year for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I mean, I guess last time we talked, you were...
That was before I started at Disney.
You were just about to start at Disney. And you went, I guess you worked on Frozen 2.
Frozen 2, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it feels like 10 years have passed since we last talked. I don't even know anymore.
So what's going on with you? I mean, obviously you're still in LA. Yeah, everything. So how have you adapted to this whole situation?
I'm loving LA, so I'm really happy to be here. And I'm currently on hold to go back to Disney at the end of August.
Okay.
And until then, whoop, are you here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know what's going on. Oh, your window totally disappeared.
Am I back?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm living in LA. I'm on hold to start at Disney, and I've been doing a lot of photography. But yeah, I mean, I was going to start at Disney in March, and everything got delayed. So since then, it's just like trying to survive like everybody else, you know?
It's been
interesting.
But you know what's interesting is obviously Disney, I mean, it's Disney animation. Animation is like one of the things that is kind of still possible to make.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's not like the effects where you have to wait for the place to be shot or anything like that.
I think the main problem is that one, they're trying to coordinate, you know, animation can be made remotely, but it's also like the amount of data that they need to sort out and all that stuff, it's pretty complex. And, you know, figuring out how to actually make it work, you know, remotely for the whole team, and also figuring out, okay, if the movie cannot get released, you know, what's the strategy going to be? So I think originally they delayed it because of that. And now they're hoping that the movie will still get made by the end of the year. So, yeah,
and I'm assuming this is an animation. I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, it's called Raya and the Last Dragon, so it's their next feature film. It's been fun being, you know, I started focusing on my photography side of things, and it was totally taking off. And I've been covering all these things happening in LA, you know, between the protests and between the pandemic, and it got me a lot of exposure. So I want to keep growing that side of things slowly but surely.
Yeah. So what was it like as a photographer? Because I was very curious, right? As a photographer, especially in the early days of the shutdown. So I'm thinking like late March or so, there was a lot of strange looking things in LA because of, you know, tumbleweeds in downtown, those type of things.
Yeah.
Did you drive around and try to find those moments?
Yeah, I was, you know, it's interesting for me because I felt that, you know, in many ways I'm still new to LA, right? So I'm like still discovering the neighborhoods and trying to connect with the community and all that stuff. And, you know, then the pandemic happened, everyone is at home. And, you know, I'm basically driving around or walking around. I would park my car in a different neighborhood and be like, okay, today I'm going to check out this neighborhood. And I would just like walk around with my camera, and trying to capture like the emptiness of LA.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. And I mean, I, I couldn't even half predict what would happen. But, you know, I went from photographing empty streets and empty neighborhoods that usually are very busy, even like Rodeo Drive, for example, or Santa right. Monica or Venice Beach or, you know, all these kinds of things. And all of a sudden I go from emptiness to like the total opposite of, you know,
wow.
thousands of people on the streets protesting in support of BLM, you know?
Yeah.
So it was such a trip, you know, and, right. and then it really allowed me to be like, okay, you know, see the before and afters almost, and connecting with people and getting to know people. And it was such a fascinating, it's been such a fascinating journey, and I don't think we're nowhere near the end, you know? So,
sure.
So it's been really fun and humbling, you know, at the same time to kind of experience that.
Do you see yourself sort of documenting this stuff, or do you see yourself participating in it in some ways? I mean, I guess by a little both.
Yeah, because I think, you know, I'm definitely like basically doing documentary photography, right? Almost like mm-hmm. photojournalism. A news website here in LA called losangelino.com. They actually mm-hmm. put me on their roster of photojournalists. So I'm, you know, sometimes they send me on assignments with credentials and everything, and I'm like photographing and doing photojournalism for them and sending photography to them so that they can publish it. Mm-hmm. So that's been an amazing experience.
Have you ever done that before?
Not officially as part of, like, I've had a lot of photos published in the different news media channels and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was always sporadic, and, you know, it's something that I've always loved because I'm really fascinated about documentary photography and photojournalism. I think it's one of the most powerful and important forms of art that that photographers can even make. So it was a really cool opportunity to be added to this team, and, you know, being able to really immerse myself in the protests, you know, with my camera, and not only be an observer as a photographer, but also like connecting with the people and talking to them and asking about their backgrounds and stories. And then being, you know, when I post them on social media, even connecting with them, or somebody else would recognize these people and tag them, you know. So I kept growing this bubble, you know, of like stories, and sure. it was really, I mean, it's really powerful. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Do you feel that, I mean, how does this sort of relate to where your career is at this point? Do you think that this whole situation has changed your focus in terms of what you want to do?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I've been working in animation for a long time, but mm-hmm. I've been slowly wanting to focus more and more on photography.
Right.
And it's the interesting thing is that they kind of like inform each other, you know, like anytime I do photography, I'm like still training my eye for composition and lighting and color and black and white, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm in animation, I'm doing exactly the same thing, but in film, and, you know, it's a slower process, more detail oriented, but mm-hmm. your eye is being trained the same way. So, mm-hmm. so even if I start focusing more on photography and starting to get more opportunities that way, you know, it doesn't necessarily negate what I'm doing when I work in film. But yeah, I mean, if I can, I would easily be very happy just being able to survive as a photographer, you know, and being sent on assignment to some random place to cover something, you know, an event or whatever it is. I love that kind of stuff. There's something yeah. about it that makes me really feel really alive, you know?
Right.
And I think it's part of, I think maybe just being an artist, it's like, you know, once you do a certain thing for many, many years, like animation, it's a little bit hard to keep yourself like instigated by the newness of what you're creating, right?
Right.
And, you know, maintaining that excitement of like, oh, this is new. How am I going to light this? How am I going to create this image? You know? And,
well, isn't it like the photography you're doing, especially the kind you're talking about, like photojournalism or documentary style, is, I mean, you don't have as much control. It's very opportunistic, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like you basically get there and it's like, well, here's my situation. I have to find the perfect moment and the perfect angle to compose that image, right?
It feels like, and maybe that's why it feels so alive, because your brain is firing at all cylinders, right? You're like, using all the senses at the same time to try to figure out what should be captured, right? I'm looking everywhere. I'm listening to everything. You know, I'm taking photos and I'm like with my eyes open, trying to figure out what else might be happening, you know, and trying to predict a lot of things that might happen. So, you know, sometimes in these protests, I'm like running around like crazy back and forth, you know, and I'm like, okay, I saw these people back there, and, you know, most likely they're going to be walking here, you know, in this section. So I need to be on that side because the lighting is coming from this way, you know. So your brain is like at 100 miles an hour and you're constantly like doing this for hours.
Not like you just turn around and take a picture. You have to plan on anticipate what's going to happen and be there when that happens.
And I guess I love that. It just makes it so, it's an adrenaline rush, you know. And and it feels like you're really helping to tell the story. You know, I was feeling with the protests happening, I was in the first protest that I went to was actually where there were the riots in Fairfax here in LA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was like in the middle of it and you could sense the change of energy in the crowd and in the police, you know, and you could tell that something was going to happen. And from then on, like you know, you keep seeing the media, how violent these protests were being, you know, and how unsafe and all these stories, you know, and like just the fact that I was there in the middle of all the protests, I was going every single day to a different protest in the city and seeing how human they really were and how important they were and how peaceful they were, you know, and the violence that you would see was like a tiny little minuscule story in the whole thing. So
yeah, but that gets the clicks.
Yeah, exactly.
No one wants to click on an article that says 1,000 very peaceful people walked down the street quietly about something that they felt very strongly about. That's not going to get clicks. That's the problem, right? It's the problem with protesting is and they're looking for that moment where it's like, you know,
It's like
a hockey match.
Drama,
like someone,
right?
People go to hockey matches to see the fights. You know, they don't, and that's really upsetting to me. It's like, mm-hmm. don't you see what they're amazing athletes. It's not about the goons on the side. Like, why is there this sideshow going on? I agree, but it does bring up an issue, right? You were at a riot, right? You were at that situation. Now, how did that make you feel in terms of your safety, in terms of those situations?
It's, you know, I mean, I the way I work is a little maybe crazy. I don't know, but I'm very comfortable in very uncomfortable scenarios, you know, and I was in Haiti post-quake, you know, like in a very intense couple of weeks, you know, like covering a lot of stuff, doing documentary photography as well. But, you know, it's intense you have to let go of you don't even have time to think about your fears. You're like aware, you know, like I always go to these protests with like everything ready for, you know, I have press credentials and I have a press vest and I have, you know, like baking soda water in case I get tear gassed, you know, and I have all these things that I know how to, I know what to do in case the situation gets a lot worse, you know, and you have to be, I think you have to be so self-aware when you're in these things and you have to sense what's going to happen, right? So I was like right behind the police line. I was in the middle of the police line when I felt the energy, you know, shifting and I knew something was going to happen. I've been in protests before where there was a lot of violence. So you immediately start giving space to like see what's going to happen, you know, and protect yourself and be there for other people if needed. So it was okay, you know, it's definitely intense, you know, but when you're in the middle of it, you're not thinking of that. You're just trying to be safe and you're trying to capture the story. So, you know, it's fine. But you definitely have to be aware, you know?
Sure.
But it's, it's definitely something that I love. I mean, all my photography work tends to veer between documentary and portraiture and studio and stuff. But because of the lockdowns and all that stuff, portraiture is not something that is really happening right now, you know?
Right.
So the documentary side of things becomes a bigger side of my work. So it's an interesting flowy dance, you know, with creativity, sure. I guess. But I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because LA, I mean, I'm sure as you know by now, because you've been looking, LA is so big. Like it is a very big city, and it's really more, it's not a city. It's like 100 cities all congealed together, you know?
Yeah.
So there's very different neighborhoods and very different areas. So I'm sure that's something that you've been exploring as well. How have you, you know, what are some of the areas that you were kind of unexpected that you found really interesting things in?
It's, you know, I mean, every, like you said, it's so different than every neighborhood that I've been going to. You're just like discovering little gems, and you can see that there's a lot of history in each community, you know, and that's, to me, that's very fascinating because I love the diversity of LA. And, you know, interestingly enough, I'm also, when I moved here to work on Frozen 2 last year, I had like 1 week to find an apartment, to move, to do all that stuff. And it was so quick. And, you know, I settled in Echo Park, which I love the neighborhood. But now that I have like more time to like kind of like start looking around, I also started looking at apartments, you know, in different neighborhoods. So I'm like forcing myself to just get out there and visit different communities, you know, and see what could be potentially a better fit, you know. And it's just interesting because there's so many places, you know, going to the Arts District, which is actually a very expensive neighborhood in LA now, but it's all like, there's so many street art projects, you know, happening and murals that are very political in nature. So it's actually very fun to walk around randomly, you know, just looking at all the street art that's appearing there. And, you know, other neighborhoods like downtown, there's, I didn't really get to know downtown that much, but since a lot of the protests are based towards Pershing Square or Grand Park, you know, like in front of City Hall, I got to just walk around all the streets in downtown LA and like really observe the energy of that area, which is so different from what it was like just 10 years ago, you know?
Yes.
So it's just fascinating, you know, and every single, I mean, the biggest protest was the Pride, it's not really an official Pride protest, but it was a solidarity march with the queer Black community. And I mean, the protest was so large, and it started near the Capitol Records building, which is so such a historic neighborhood.
Hollywood.
And then it went all the way to West Hollywood, right? So you're walking around all these like different streets in Hollywood and West Hollywood. And I mean, with thousands and thousands and thousands of people from all over the place, you know? So it's just like, it's been such an amazing, weird, bizarre way of getting to know the city, you know, between the pandemic and all these protests. It's just been like, I mean, I could never imagine that this would be the way that I would experience LA, right?
Well, I'll tell you this, it's a different city than it was too. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things have changed. I mean, there's no traffic. That's like a huge deal.
I know. Yeah. It's getting worse now, but it's
getting worse because people are starting to drive more, but it's going up and down, but it is a weird thing. I find it fascinating. It's funny. You live in Echo Park. There's a street on Echo Park that you have to look up. It's called Baxter Street. Have you seen Baxter Street yet? Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's so steep. It is one of the steep, it's like crazy. One of the steepest streets in the world. It's like up there, steeper than most streets in San Francisco, by the way.
Oh, cool. I should check it out since I moved here from SF.
I know. So it's the same. And I went, my GPS or my Waze or whatever took me there one time. And at that time I had a clutch on my car and I thought I was going to destroy my car. It was just ridiculous. But it's the same street that the Laurel and Hardy show when they're trying to move the piano up the hill. That's
where they filmed that. Cool.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Because I know that Lynette lives in that area too. And she says, I finally found that street. It's insane. So you definitely have to look at it and take some pictures. You know, actually, it's an interesting thing because photographs are like hills are hard to photograph at, because you can't really see how steep they are, you know? So I'm curious about like what the how do you accomplish that in a photography, you know, like take it from the side because all the houses have like, you know, three floors.
The angles, yeah.
But I'm very curious about how you photograph that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I was thinking how I was photographing in San Francisco and it's a mix of everything. It's like capturing, you know, if you have people, it's easier because then you have a frame, you know, creating a reference,
frame of reference
for a viewer to like immediately connect with the, what the scale is and what the situation is, you know, but usually is that, or maybe even on top of the hill, you can get like how steep the decline is by not seeing it,
right.
You know, but so
right.
It's all about creating these horizons and playing around with those lines, you know, but yeah, that would be a really good challenge. I'll definitely check it out.
But yeah, I thought about it when I was thinking, because I was like, you know, whenever I go to like if I go skiing and I try to take a picture of it, it's like the hill never looks as steep as I remember it being. It's like, really?
You're like scary. Really scared going downhill, and then
I know I take a picture of it, it's like not so bad. But yeah, it's interesting. So you've been going to the beach as well, I'm assuming, or going down to the Venice Beach area?
You know, I started finally going to, it's one of those things that when you move to LA, you're like, I'm always going to be at the beach. And then you move to LA and you never actually go to the beach, you know, and you're like, and then quarantine happened, you know, and they started reopening beaches. And then I was like, okay, no, I should take advantage while I actually, while I'm still looking for a job, you know, and like figuring out what I'm going to do for work, then I'm going to try to go to the beach a little bit. And it's been awesome. I mean, being able, you know, one thing that I came to realize is that a lot of people have this image of LA as being like this concrete jungle, you know, and it's so full of nature and it's so nearby, a lot of nature escapes, you know, so I've been fortunate enough to like, you know, like we were talking about, I just drove from High Sierra to go camping nearby.
Yeah.
I've been going to the beach. I've been going hiking. I've been going to Joshua Tree, which is only 2 hours away,
right.
You know, so it's,
yeah, in the winter you can go surfing and skiing in the same day.
Yeah, I, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago I was like, oh, I cannot sleep. You know, I was having like this biggest, one of those nights where you just cannot fall asleep, and it was 2 a.m. and I'm like, what should I do? And then I was like, oh, maybe I should drive to the Mojave Desert and try to find the comet. You know, so that's what I did. I threw my coffee maker in the car. You know, from camping and. Mm-hmm. Brought all my photography gear and I drove two hours to Mojave Desert and I found a spot off-roading that I could go to, and I was watching the sunrise, taking photos of the sunset, of the sun, of the comet, and it was amazing. I mean, it was so magical. And then I was back home like at 8 a.m, you know, I went to sleep then. But, you know, just the fact that you're living in one of the biggest cities of the world, you know, but you're also like so close to escapes like that in the middle of nowhere, it's pretty fascinating.
It's funny.
I've inspiring.
I was you know, I've lived here for almost 20 years and I never really used to go to the beach that much at all, and then suddenly this last year I started picking up fly fishing and I've been going to the beach.
That's cool.
Like I 3 to 4 times a week I go to the beach because I get up at like 4:30 in the morning. And then I get to the beach, you know, by like 5:30 or 6. And then I fish all morning. And I fished this morning, actually. So
that's amazing. And you're in Pasadena, right?
I'm in Burbank. Cool. Yeah.
Burbank. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, and it was like, it was great. You know, I went to go fishing. And what's interesting is I go there and it's like you said, it's like, you know, sunrise at the beach, just pretty amazing. And you're the only person on the entire beach in Malibu, which is kind of amazing as well.
Yeah.
And, and then, you know, you're fly fishing. And then, so I meet these other people that are into fly fishing as well. And they started telling me, for example, it's like, oh, do you know there's like extremely exciting fly fishing in LA on the LA River for carp? And I'm like, what? And
really?
Like, yep. And it's like, you can
catch
carp.
There's water there?
Mm-hmm. You can catch carp in the LA River, and it's like one of the most exciting fish to catch on a fly.
Mm.
I'm like, really? And then they're like, yeah, he's like, and it's not always, you know, not the, necessarily the areas where it's a big concrete ditch. There's other areas you can go to. But I was like, so suddenly it's like, yeah, there's all this weird pockets of nature and strange things that are going on.
In the middle
of
nowhere, you know.
Like, really? Right? Yeah. It's like, yeah, yeah, by the LA Zoo, there's an area right there. Catch a 14-pound carp. It's like, why? Like... So,
it's amazing to find these things that, you know, kind of like allow you to connect with a city in different ways. You know, you were saying you've been here for 20 years and you're still finding new experiences in the city. You know, like I started training for biking, the AIDS life cycle, right? Which is basically biking from San Francisco to LA.
Nice.
So I was doing that I was going on two, three bike.
How many miles is
week.
That?
The actual ride itself is 550 miles. It's a lot, and it's about 80 to 100 miles a day for 7 days in a row. So you have to train a lot for it, right? So I started joining these teams and here in LA and biking all over the place through the canyons, through all these places that otherwise I would never even think of going. And so I really feel fortunate because I think it's only been a year that I've been here, or just over a year, but I've already had so many experiences that allowed me to not only grow myself creatively as an artist, but also like just experience like the vastness and the diversity of LA, of what LA has to offer. So it's been a really awesome experience.
Well, I'm glad you're saying that because, you know, there's a lot of things, and like all of us as artists, right? We all have a creative input or a creative output that we need to do, and we need to discover new things. And somehow I think what this whole, situation has done is to sort of kickstart, like it's kind of like kick the dirt and to undiscover new things underneath it, right? So there's somehow you're discovering new things. You're discovering, you're biking, or you're inspired by the environment and the new environment around you, which is really great. Like, you know, when I was locked at home, I picked up fly tying because I was into fly fishing. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's a perfect activity to get my stress away, you know, or biking would be a really good one too. So
I think it's important,
finding that creative something that can be different than you've done before, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm single, live alone, you know, it's like, I don't have a dog. So it's very easy to go crazy really quickly, you know? So
yeah,
I think it's important for mental health, you know, to even find, you know, ways of, you know, I meditate daily, but I've been doing that most of my life now. And, but I, you know, creatively, if I feel like I'm creative throughout this whole experience, then I don't feel stagnant, right? And I think that's the one thing that kind of like keeps that light shining inside of you. And, even though I wasn't working at Disney or working on my usual like project that actually pay good money, you know, it's like, oh, I'm still throwing myself out there, you know, and I'm trying new things and I'm learning new things. And, you know, I gained so much, my photos were gaining so much traction throughout this that, you know, I gained a lot of connections. I gained a lot of momentum, you know, like my name started being more recognized here in LA. I started connecting with people that work in film and other photographers. And it's been an incredible journey, you know.
But that's also been one of your goals, right? That was one of your frustrations you had in the Bay Area, is that the Bay Area is so centered around the tech industry and not creative enough. And so to you, Los Angeles felt like a good place to be a creative, more creative, right?
And it really just proved that, you know, because these experiences the last year alone, I wouldn't have made those connections in San Francisco that easily, right? So I love San Francisco and I love the Bay Area and I miss my friends there, you know. But I mean, this every time I have a conversation with another creative in LA, you know, randomly, either be it on the street or protests or where or online, you know, like through my photography, I mean, it's it's just like, so it feels so liberating, you know, because it's kind of like the universe sending you little signs that, you know, there's something brewing out here and I don't know where it is. I don't know if my photography is going to take me in a different direction. I don't know if film is going to take me in a different direction. I have no idea, but I'm just kind of like embracing it all and be, you know, I'm trying to be grateful for everything that comes to my plate and right. Keep doing the work, you know, and see where it's going to go.
Well, I think that's, it's true. There's a lot of stuff that's going on right now, that you can do now, right? So you're having conversations with people that are creative. So immediately it's going to be easier for them to relate to you and you to relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
So as such, when you have that conversation, you can go somewhere with it, as opposed to, oh, that's nice, you're a photographer. Cool.
Yeah.
You know?
end of conversation,
right? So it's like, you know, as opposed to here, where it's like, wow, that's cool. And you start to talk about stuff that are, yeah, you're able to relate to a lot more things,
there's a different appreciation, right? It's like,
yeah.
A lot of times, you know, you say you're a photographer in San Francisco, or you say you're an artist, and it's, mm-hmm. like we said, end of conversation, or there's, you know, people don't take it as seriously. People don't see it as, you know, a true form of, you know, work.
Right.
And they, you know, it's not just that I'm picking my iPhone and like taking photos randomly and, you know, right. saying that I'm a photographer. It's like, I've been doing it for many years, right? I can mm-hmm. go into a studio and I know how to use lights and strobes to create an image, right? And
right.
that's a very different process than, you know, that I think here there's a lot of appreciation for that. And in San Francisco, it's just a little bit harder, you know, because the community is all a little bit different and there's not as many opportunities. There's a lot of tech companies, and tech companies are trying to be creative, but they don't really understand how creative people even work, you know? So it's an interesting challenge. It's kind of fascinating. And here, even companies outside of the creative spectrum, you know, because they're so immersed in a world that lives around creativity, there's already a different understanding. So that's been interesting. But I mean, it's such a hard time for LA, because most of the industry in LA is entertainment and creative industries, you know, and you definitely notice the toll, you know, that the pandemic is bringing.
Well, what's interesting to me is that what really this thing has done is that we have to be socially distant, right? So you mm-hmm. start with that idea. Socially distant, we didn't necessarily understand the impact that would have on different areas, right? What's interesting, the weird thing about Disney, because Disney seemed like it was so diverse, did so many things, but absolutely every part of Disney involved people being close
together. Yeah.
Right? Whether it's cruise ships or theme parks or movie theaters or hotels, like it all involved people being close together. So that in sense kind of destroyed all of their different areas. But the thing what Disney also does have is it does do some great animation, right? And so really good animation. And so that is something that's highly in demand right now. We're all stuck at home, so we're absorbed. The irony is that there's a huge demand for content. It's just hard for us to make it.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And it's interesting. I was just having this conversation with another Disney artist, you know, because we're both on hold to start in August. And I'm trying to figure out like the logistics of how to plan even creating a film remotely, right? Because especially in lighting, you have to be so conscientious of color subtleties, and you know, your monitor has to be color graded, calibrated, and you have to, you know, maintain continuity between sequences in color, and you have to worry about so many different things. And I wonder, I honestly do not know how they're coping with that kind of stuff for a film. I know they finished the short film that apparently production went really well remotely, but I don't, yeah, in terms of feature film, I cannot even imagine what that must entail, you know, to really control that kind of like level of quality that's expected, you know?
Right.
And it's an interesting challenge, you know, like they used to be already pretty flexible in terms of allowing artists to work maybe once a week, you know, like from home, you know, so but all of a sudden changing the whole system and the whole pipeline of animation to make it remotely, I think it's a pretty substantial challenge, right?
It is.
Especially to maintain these, you know, it's still tight production deadlines, and, you know, you still need to have some kind of, you know, continuity in terms of the amount of work that you're able to even create per week and the amount of shots you're able to work. And there's so many variables working from home that can go wrong, you know, from simple stuff like internet speed, you know, to like lag when you're controlling your mouse through across the internet interwebs, you know, like there's so many different things. And I don't know, I'm so curious about this new paradigm, you know, and I hope it works well, because I actually think that this being 2020, there's, if we can make a world where people drive less and maybe working from home gives even better work-life balance, you know, then that's all positives to me, you know?
Well, I think what's going on is we were able to see how many jobs can work from home, right? Mm-hmm. And there's turns out it's a lot, you know? And I think the more that people do that, the more it's like, oh, well, you know, I bet you there's going to be a lot of people that will be happy to just keep working from home. And there's a lot of jobs that are going to let people do that as well, because then they can, you know, it's going to change the entire urban setting, right? Because
I think so.
Especially like Palo Alto, right? If you have all these people in the Silicon Valley that are, you know, being paid outrageous amounts of money because they live in a place that costs an outrageous amount of money.
Yeah.
Right. And then suddenly I could do this from Idaho. Why would I have to go to work? And they're like, yeah, of course you can. So then it changes, right? So then everyone sort of balances out, and the city changes and all of that, you know. So I'm just glad I have 2.5 hours less traffic every day.
I know. You always had a pretty long commute, and it makes a difference.
It does make a difference. Now, I have an electric car and everything's fine, you know, so I'm generally okay with that. But still, even just the idea of the stress that it puts on you, you know, by the time I even get to work after an hour and 15 minutes of driving, mm-hmm. and I get to work, I'm not ready to work right away. You know, it's like, ugh. You know, and then now I'm just like, get up, get my coffee, and I'm typing my first email after 10 minutes of getting out of bed. So that's a pretty good deal, you know?
Yeah, I'm used to working from home, you know, because I've been doing it for so long. So,
right.
And I'm also more of an introvert, so I'm totally fine being at home by myself, you know, working on stuff. But I, you know, obviously it also brings a lot of other challenges in terms of mental health for a lot of people, and in terms of, you know, isolation. And there's, it's interesting, right? It's like, how do you keep like team morale when you're working with a team? It's supposed to be a collaborative environment, you know? So
yeah. How does collaboration work for you? How does that been?
Yeah. You know? I mean, so far I've been doing, you know, even when I do photo shoots with more people, after they opened up the lockdowns, I was able to be in a studio with a few other people. And I mean, we're socially distancing and using masks and disinfecting everything, but it worked out okay. But, you know, I'm curious to see how it's going to be working on a big team like Disney, right? Where you're, you know, trying to maintain that creative collaboration between artists and you're only using Slack or Zoom meetings or stuff, you know?
Right.
I remember when I was at DreamWorks, we had half the team was in LA and half the team was in Redwood City. So we had a lot of, you know, team meetings where we were all like video chatting with each other. And it was always very awkward. You know, it was not, you know, part of me almost thinks that, you know, there's this idea of companies trying to mimic the model of remote work to what they usually have inside an office. And if they try to bring the same type of environment to that, it's just like awkward and never works and makes it worse. And maybe there's a space of like really studying, not trying to make the same, but really studying, okay, if we're all going to be separate, how can we still create some form of like creative space, you know, for people to be able to feel that they're together, you know, working. But I just think there are different models, you know, different realities.
It is a little strange because, like, for example, there's like, I've been at work and, you know, around a bunch of desks, right? And then mm-hmm. people who are sitting across from each other are messaging each other yeah. by typing, right? And they're doing that actually out of, you know, to be respectful of the people around them. So they're not just having this conversation constantly and interrupting people, right? Or running people's thoughts. So people are kind of isolating themselves, even though they're right mm-hmm. next to the other person. So it is a little bit, it just kind of goes both ways. I've found that video chats have actually been pretty good for me. It's been interesting. There's a couple places where it's like the room is always open. You just go into it. You know, it's like going into a conference room. It's like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
You know,
that's funny. Yeah, because I remember, you know, like the interesting things that I remember being at Pixar, and it was before Slack existed. It was before all these things, right? So you either communicated with other people via email, or most likely you would actually walk around the office and go to people's office and have a chat, you know? And
right.
I love that. Maybe because I'm 41 years old now, I'm like, I actually love that experience of like talking to people.
Yep.
And you know, it's interesting because being at Disney, for example, all of a sudden you have a whole system of like chatting and via Slack and keeping up the communication. And I think there's a tendency of people, even though they're in the same office, like you were saying, that people will just say, no, I'll just Slack, you know, instead of getting up and moving. You know, it makes me miss that, you know, like 10 years ago when you actually walked around a little bit to talk to people, you know. I mean, when I was at Masterclass, we had an open office environment, which I'm actually personally not a big fan of, you know, because I just find it super distracting. But I always got up and moved around, and I was like really talking to my editors or my team or whatever. I was always like trying to go and talk to people, and I love doing that as much as possible. So it's going to be interesting to see. Maybe I'm going to be video chatting every single person, you know. I don't know. Yeah.
What my wife and I have noticed is that people are more likely to actually call on their phone than texting. Like I'm getting more like phone calls than I've ever had, because before it was all just a text message because I just, you know, now it's like, hey, what's going on? I want to speak to a person, you know.
Yeah. And I enjoy that, you know.
Yeah,
Actually, my friends in San Francisco, I actually instituted like this goal for this year, even before the pandemic started. I was like, I think when we want to chat with each other instead of texting, we should try to make a phone call and actually have a conversation. And my friends were like, that is such a great idea. And we started like actually putting an effort and sitting down and having a good old phone chat conversation for like half an hour or something. And you feel like more connected, and it's so easy that it's so interesting that throughout the years, texting just replaced a lot of these things, you know, and just became like this immediacy, you know?
I mean, this originally was not for texting. This was for actually calling people.
Yeah, exactly.
And people used to be on their phones talking all the time. Those were like the business people. Now they just message, you know?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And you remember people used to have, I mean, now you have your AirPods on, but back in the day, remember they had the Bluetooth, you know, headset thing. And it was like, yeah, that's a guy who does a lot of business, right? He's got the BlackBerry and he's got the Bluetooth headset. And now it's like everything happens in a text. It's funny that you're right. It's reversing itself. People are actually getting up and talking because they miss a voice. They miss talking to people.
Yeah, I'm definitely really looking forward to working on another film in this new reality we're in, you know, to kind of just see what I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot of new things, you know, just in that frame of mind, you know, to keep the motivation going and all that stuff through crazy stressful deadlines. But it will be fun, you know. I think I'm excited about it. I just hope it actually happens, you know. Like
you're still interested. You still want
like different.
You're still going to be working in animation. That's still something you enjoy doing, right?
I really enjoy it, and I mean, obviously, I keep looking at opportunities. You know, after Disney, I worked for a couple of months at Method Studios. So I was working on a game for Amazon games, you know, through Method Studios. And it was awesome. I mean, it was a really rough commute because it was in Santa Monica and I was living in Echo Park. So that was my first real experience of like, oh, this is what LA traffic in commute time is, you know? So it was like, it was like an hour and a half each way, you know, and I was getting home like, oh my God, where did my day go? Like, I'm like, there's nothing left. So that was an interesting experience, but it was, again, a super different project, you know, like working with a different team in totally different pipelines. And so that kind of stuff is very, it's always worth it. You know, it's very interesting. I keep trying to find opportunities more towards what I was doing at a masterclass, you know, just because I really do love the live action organic aspect of working multiple creative teams and being on set and being all that stuff, you know, like that kind of energy is really familiar and exciting to me right now.
Right.
Animation, it's always fun and creative. It's something that I'm comfortable with, you know, it's, so I can do it. I can do it easily. I love working with the teams at Disney because they're so talented and it's always such an amazing experience. So I'll keep doing it as long as they keep asking me to come back, you know?
Right.
And taking advantage of that, you know, it's a good studio to be a part of, obviously, you know? So it's been fun.
Well, I think there's actually, you know, it's interesting that you hear about it all the time, that virtual production is going to save Hollywood. Right. Mm. So that's there's some level of possibility that that's going to happen, but that's something that's interesting as well, because that's kind of a hybrid of animation and live action in a lot of ways, right? Because I think it's going to be interesting when people start thinking about that as a solution. And that could be something that could be very interesting, because you can bring both sensibilities to that, that you have in terms of animation, in terms of your photography, on this virtual stage in a lot of ways. So it could be
there's definitely, you know, it's interesting because there's definitely still a lot of stigma between, you know, the separation between animation and even visual effects, right? It's like, and I think we talked about it last time, you know, but it definitely really happens that, you know, you look at my reel and most of it is animation. So maybe I'm not able to light in visual effects. And I'm like, I'm not from the same frame of mind. I think if you have an artistic eye and experience for lighting, you can really work on anything, you know, but it's an interesting thing to notice that, right, between the visual effects houses and the animation houses. And it's still, there's still a lot of separation, but I think it's slowly starting to potentially come a little bit together.
Well, I think you in particular, because of your photography, I mean, the thing is, the difference that I see is that in visual effects, most of the time you're trying to match a plate, right? So you have a reference of a plate. And if you're a good photographer, which you are, you're going to be able to say, this is where the lighting is coming from. And you'll be able to match that lighting, right?
Yeah.
When you're doing animation, you're painting with light a little bit. It's a little bit different, right? So, but I mean, if you know lighting, you know, lighting is lighting, right? That's the way I see it. I don't necessarily see it.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that even when you're lighting an animation and you're not, you know, you're not matching necessarily to a live action plate like you would in visual effects, but
you're
thinking about exactly the same things, right? Yeah. You're matching continuity. You're thinking of light direction no matter what, you know, you're thinking of time of day. You're thinking of so many different details, even more details than you would be on a live action film, right? On a visual effects plate, you know, and it's just an interesting thing because they really kind of like educate each other in a way. Actually, I think it would be so amazing if there was more flexibility in terms of what artists could do, because an animation artist that goes into visual effects will just get a better eye out of it and become a better artist and create better work out of it and vice versa, you know?
Right.
So I'm always, I'm always up for the frame of mind that it's important for people to be exposed to different things and different ways of working and, you know, different techniques, because, you know, animation is using more compositing now, for example, and lighters are doing their own compositing in places like Disney. Mm-hmm. So that helps a lot if you have that experience from visual effects and, you know, and the other way around. But it's an interesting thing. You know, I think with virtual stuff happening more and VR and things like that, I and even games, you know, like these three like areas of visual effects, games and animation, are like slowly getting much more similar, and it's mm-hmm. it's an exciting time to be in the industry. And I'm just like a little bit tired of sitting in front of the computer for like 12 hours straight every single day, you know. So I'm like, I love finding an excuse to, oh, let's actually be on set and move these things. And that's right. That's part of the reason I love studio photography so much, which is, it just feels so freeing, you know, to actually be grabbing things and, you know, placing modifiers on lights and, you know, directing yep. shoots and directing people and supervising all that stuff. It's a different type of energy than I'm clicking buttons all day long.
It has been very hard and very challenging for people. They do get caught in the monotony of the day to day, right? Mm-hmm. It's also strange, like for me, like, you know, I was going to work and I had the same routine. I was going to work all the time. And now I'm like, okay, I'm doing it in front of a computer, right? Mm-hmm. It's in my house. But I still need to get up. And then I get up and go talk to my wife, like I would talk to a coworker, right? Yeah. And she's set up in our bedroom. So she's got a flame in our bedroom.
Oh my God. That is amazing.
Yeah. So her work like brought over a flame so she can work over in our bedroom. And so like, thank God I got fiber for our house. So we've got really good internet.
It makes a big difference.
Makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
But turns out that my wife doesn't like the chit chat like I do. I just found that out. She's like, what? I'm busy. Oh okay. Can I get you some coffee or something? It's like that. We've never actually worked together in the same place ever, you know, like,
yeah.
And she is, you know, she's a flame artist. And so her hours are like, it's like a short order cook, get it done. Like you got 15 minutes to finish this shot, you know? Yeah. So she can't have time to chit chat with me.
Yeah. Why I'm like, I'm dying to get a dog, you know, because if I'm going to be stuck at home working on these films and working.
Are you thinking about getting a dog?
I am. Yeah. You know,
a lot of people have gotten animals, which is great.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the best time to get a dog. It's like, okay, might as well get some company, you know, to vent a little bit of steam, you know, between stresses.
There was a really hilarious YouTube this Canadian comedian. She's really funny and I've been following her, and she was having a conversation. She had this skit, because she's in quarantine but she still makes stuff, right? A skit of having a conversation with herself back in January, like mm-hmm. like her person in January and then the other person in, you know, quarantine. She goes, so, you know, the Australian wildfires, I mean, that's going to be like the event of 2020. She goes, yeah, not even close. And then she says, you should get a dog. It's like, oh, I don't have time for a dog. You know, I'm traveling a lot. Yeah, get a dog.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's like, I mean, it's hard to even realize that the wildfires were in January.
In January.
Right? It's just like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this whole year.
First of all, it's hard to realize we're in July, because mm-hmm. the time between both, it seems both like 10 years have passed and like 2 weeks have passed. Like,
yeah,
it just, you know, it's really, all the days are blending together. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to know what's going on. But I was funny. I was talking to Andre, our good friend Andre, who runs THU. And I said, he was saying, oh, how are you doing? It's like, I am determined to come out of this hibernation a bigger, stronger bear than I've ever been. You know, this is going to be like the thing I'm going to be doing. To be to better myself in a lot of ways, like experience new things, and see the world differently.
Yeah. And I think that's what we can all hope for. You know, it's like if ideally after months of, you know, struggling with a new reality, it's mm-hmm. we really take this time to learn how to be a little bit more humble about our own reality and
yep.
you know, figure out learn something new about ourselves and others and figure out how to communicate better, figure out what's important in our lives and what's not. And I mean, there's so many good things that can come out of it. And I think it's hard to remember that when you're like in the thick of, you know, things in the middle of this whole pandemic and potentially another lockdown even here in LA, right? So it's,
yeah,
it's complicated, but there's, I think there's a lot of, you know, I got closer to a lot of people and met some good, amazing neighbors. And creatively, I feel like I'm a much better photographer today than I was like just 5 months ago, you know? And
yeah, that's great.
It's a good feeling to have, you know? And I'm like going around my house and I'm like every week I'm like separating things that I want to donate or that I want to sell. And like, you know, like there's all these little things that hopefully allow me to, you know, even though I might be exhausted, you know, from this like marathon, I'll hopefully feel a little bit optimistic and better at the end, you know. But
I agree.
I think it's important for us to be connecting with other people and be like, "Are you okay? Like, how are you doing?" And it's all of us are in this together, which is interesting.
I found myself calling people that I hadn't talked to in forever, you know, and people across the globe, which has been really great. Like even just this podcast, for example, you know, I always was very strict about it when I was before. I was like, no, I have to do them in person because that's how I connect with someone and I have to see them and I want to take them out to lunch. And it's this whole thing, remember?
Yeah.
And then because you were on the previous one. And then now I was like, well, I don't really have a choice, so I'm going to do this. And then when I did that, I was like, okay, first of all, the big thing is like, I want to be able to see someone. So video chats have been fine. You know, they've been really working well, but also it's suddenly opened the door. It's like, yo, I can talk to all these people around the globe. And suddenly like, yeah, it's not restricting me whatsoever. Yeah, I think I'm doing a podcast with some guy in Australia in a few days. So I was like, great. You know, it really
That's
kind
amazing.
Of, yeah, it's nice. Right.
Yeah. And I think this, I mean, of all, you know, you keep thinking about it because when we had the Spanish flu, you know, it's like, okay, can you imagine if we didn't have the internet, we had to be at home stuck. I mean, it would be a whole different, we can barely survive as people now, like, even though we're
And on top of that, you like, you had to go out and get food because everything was perishable back then, you know, like, it's like, imagine like, you know, didn't have a freezer full of, you know, chicken nuggets that you could go to if you needed to, you know.
I know. We're like, yeah, we have home delivery of food and groceries and whatever we want. It's like, it's not a big deal, you know. It could have been a lot worse. So
yeah,
I think it's important to have a little bit of perspective, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the people are adapting. Like, you know, in Burbank, for example, there's a major street that's in Burbank, and there's a lot of restaurants and stuff in that area. Well, they just shut down the whole street for car traffic so that all the restaurants could put their seating outside. So that they can,
I love that.
A lot of cities are doing that. And it's like, here, you know, people aren't going to be parking here anyway, because so they'll find other places to park. And that way, at least those restaurants can survive and try to create a little bit of something. So I think it's good.
Well, that's exactly. That's the thing. It's like, if this is what it takes to wake up people to a new way of living, that's a better, more communal, more just way of living, you know, then that's a good thing, right?
Right.
You know, it's what bums me out is that there's so many political struggles here in this country, you know, that actually a lot of people are suffering, and not only financially, like myself and many other artists, you know, but also like emotionally and even like health-wise, you know, it's very hard to get access to good healthcare, and a lot of people are suffering or even dying, you know, and it shouldn't, there's no need for that, right?
So
it's a weird, you know, it's a weird dichotomy of like things that are happening all at the same time, and it definitely feels like we're in this giant shift in consciousness, you know, and hopefully good things will come out of it.
Yeah, hopefully they will, for sure. I think it's good. I think it's been really nice to talk to you and see, you know, how how you're figuring out how to grow and change as a person and deal with this this situation and still maintain hope for a lot of things. I'm trying to do the same thing myself. Luckily, I'm actually very fortunate because Chaos Group keeps me well employed and lots of things to do. So I'm very busy. But otherwise, it's been really great to see sort of, you know, how other people are dealing with this. I think it's a good thing, you know, learning new things or taking the things you're good at and just get better at them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's really, yeah.
It's a constant. If you open yourself to the possibility of becoming a better person and a better artist, try to figure out all these things that you can improve in your life and, you know, throughout this, then that's what I'm trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see where it goes, but yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be able to get together at some point because it's always good seeing you, man. So
you
really
too.
I'm
so happy that you invited me again.
It's like, yeah, Fonzie's doing, because I know you're new to the city and you're doing stuff, and then it's like, no, he's gonna be busy on Frozen 2 for a while, and then suddenly like, I don't know what he's doing now. So hey, do you know Alex Nishma at all?
I do. Yeah, Alex is awesome. I loved working with Alex.
That's great. He and I worked together at Digital Domain. We both started our first job in visual effects together on Day After Tomorrow. He's been on my podcast, by the way.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah.
I really miss Alex. Was one of those people that I really connected with at Disney.
He's funny.
And I he's so funny, and I cannot wait to go back and just like, even if it's only through Slack, you know, to be able to just bug him every now and then.
yeah.
He's a hilarious and really talented artist. So it's really cool.
He's really great. You should listen to his podcast.
We
go through his backstory and he tells it in the most Alex Nishma way. Like it's basically like listening to some comedian talk about his life and his origin story. And it's like how he landed his first job while working as a waiter at a restaurant. I mean, it's like really, really funny. Really funny.
I'll definitely check it out. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, really cool. Well, thanks so much, Fonzie. It's really great seeing you. And,
thank you so much.
We will,
good luck with everything.
Yeah, you too. And keep in touch. Let us know what's going on.
I will, for sure. Have
a
good day.
Take care.